Hello, my name is Karen Guglielmo, the Special Projects Editor for SearchCIOMidMarket.com, and I'd like to welcome you to today's expert podcast on outsourcing options for the mid-market IT organizations. I am joined today by Helen Huntley. Helen is a research VP for Gartner and focuses on outsourcing and IT services. Some of her most recent research addressed negotiating outsourcing contracts and using offshoring services to cut costs in an economic downturn. Welcome, Helen.
Hello, Karen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. And as I mentioned earlier, we're here today to talk about outsourcing options for mid-market companies. I'll spend the next 10-plus minutes asking Helen to answer a number of questions about today's topic. And today's discussion will cover the options for mid-market organizations looking to outsource IT services and application development, and when it's best to go offshore versus when it's best to keep your work in the U.S. So, Helen, let's get started. First, let me ask you, is there any type of magic solution that, would you say, matches your company type or project with where you'd outsource, like offshore versus rural?
Oh, I wish there was a magic solution, but it really comes down to knowing your enterprise, what they will tolerate, and what work needs to be done. We always say in Gartner, know what work you want done, know what value you expect to gain from outsourcing, how you'd like that service to be delivered, whether it's customized or standard, before determining the vendor and where the work should be performed. I think overall, the offshore versus rural decision needs to be based on several considerations. Essentially, you really need to know your enterprise. For example, how well does your organization work with individuals from different cultures? Is your organization risk tolerant or risk adverse? And what is the corporate appetite for change? Are you a very cautious organization or a very nimble organization? Does your business unit, once they give you specifications, make frequent changes that you have to keep up with in IT? How much on-site presence do you think you're going to need through the course of doing any application development with any outsourcing firm? And what do you expect to pay for those services? So I think establishing the answers to those types of questions will help companies determine what approach is really right for them.
Okay. And what I'm seeing is I have seen a trend that there still seems to be companies, obviously the majority of them, who are going offshore for work, but some are keeping the work in the U.S. Can you kind of tell us the main reasons why companies would actually choose rural sourcing versus offshoring?
Oh, sure. There really are four primary reasons why companies choose rural sourcing versus offshoring. I think one is, what is your company's position on buying American and investing in the U.S.? For example, does your you have corporate social responsibility metrics, like you need to invest X amount of work locally or domestically. Second, does moving work to rural locations in America could have intangible benefits that your company is looking to have, such as positive public relations and marketing benefits that you wouldn't normally envision or think of when you're in IT. Additionally, some governmental agencies and even companies that work with extremely classified data, and that needs to be kept operationally within the United Nations border for security purposes. So if you have those kind of restrictions and have very secure data, rural sourcing might be an option for you since you can't send it overseas. And the last consideration really is the cultural and time zone differences. It can make communications really difficult. So rural sourcing ensures that the work is done in complementary time zones where people understand U.S. business culture. It really comes down to defining what you need, aligning with your risks and tolerance for risk, and client readiness for outsourcing, such as what is your enterprise readiness and cost expectations.
I've read some conflicting comments about project turnaround time and implementation time, and some mid-market CIOs are actually saying that projects get done quicker offshore, while some that I've read about say that shorter projects, say ones that are less than 2 months in development time, are actually too difficult to send overseas. What have you heard, and what's your opinion on that?
Well, when you're working with offshore providers, it does take time to build those relationships and establish an effective communication rapport with them. When they're working overseas, miles and miles away, you need to have that established protocol to be able to get things done quickly. So if you're trying to get short projects done, I think it really is relevant to look at, do you have that rapport with the offshore provider, or are you starting net new? So if you're used to working with each other, short projects can be better tolerated because you have that established relationship and communication mechanisms. If you're just starting out initially, a short project probably is not the best thing to do. You probably want to take a project that's going to be about 6 months in duration so you can build that rapport and give yourself enough timeline to make it sure it happens effectively. I would also say, though, that short duration projects are really kind of difficult to source at all, especially if the client itself is weak at defining their specifications for work, don't really know how they're going to measure the value of that work delivered, haven't established the governance required to get that work to somebody and then evaluate it when it comes back in. So if that's the case, it doesn't matter where the development occurs, whether it's onshore, nearshore, or offshore, because the clients really essentially lack maturity to be able to get it done quickly.
Okay. I also know that some offshore companies are actually setting up offices in the U.S. to address some of these potential U.S. or rural outsourcing customers. Does this trend say something for building your case for outsourcing in the U.S.?
Well, you're absolutely right. Foreign outsourcing vendors are setting up offices throughout the U.S. In fact, even in this May, TCS or Tata opened a very large regional development center in Cincinnati, Ohio. It sits on 220 acres of land, and it has room to grow staff of up to 5,000 people. That's a significant investment in building resource capabilities in the U.S. I think some of the goal there is to attract new clients who are hesitant to go offshore, and new clients with restrictions on what can be sent offshore, if it can be sent offshore at all. So, you know, foreign providers are making an investment here, and I think they see that as a natural evolution to their resource footprint growth. It's a natural expansion for them to come into the U.S. To answer your question directly, though, I'm not sure there is a direct link between what foreign providers are doing domestically and building capabilities rurally in the U.S. You know, as always with outsourcing, it comes down to determining what that work effort is, what vendor is then going to be appropriate, and then where the work is best delivered. Now, one aspect of foreign provider investment in the U.S. is if you're hesitant about going offshore or really concerned about doing that, you might want to work with them domestically first and then expand to use their full offshore capabilities going forward with additional projects.
Oh, that makes sense. And I actually have one final question for you before we wrap things up. Talking about due diligence, is the due diligence a mid-market company would take for an offshore company, dealing with an offshore company, the same as a rural outsourcing company? Why or why not?
Well, many of the due diligence points would be absolutely the same. You're going to look at the vendor's capability to deliver services. You're going to validate the proposed pricing and pricing methodologies. You're going to be looking at the contract structure. You're going to be evaluating the processes that are going to be utilized. And you're going to look at the vendor's financial, you know, stability. Now, things that I would additionally look for rural sourcing is really how does that provider deliver the services? For example, are they utilizing a network of skilled resources across a rural area that they can tap into when they need it, or do they have a co-location center facility where everybody is together? That, to me, is a really great question to ask. And additionally, I would say, okay, if you have people doing discrete services across the organization or across a rural area, do you even use the same development methodology? How do you effectively work together as a team when they're across different geographical areas? So we need to make sure we can check on that as well. We also really want to make sure that they have enough critical mass of skills and technology to get my job done. Again, the rural outsourcers are much smaller in nature than those that are offshore, and so we want to make sure that they have the capabilities. So where do they have the talent? Where are they finding talent? How are they bringing additional talent into their organizations? And what is the skill levels that they're bringing in? Are these people directly from college, or are they people with significant maturity and working with 3 to 5 or 5 to 10 or 10 to 15 years of experience? I'm also going to be really curious on how do they conduct a normal engagement. Would any resources be on site for me as a client, or are they going to be all in rural locations? Do they have project management capabilities or not? How do they normally communicate, and what is the length of most of their engagements? So I think you really do need to take a step further and understand exactly the way that rural outsourcer is going to be delivering your services and how they're going to meet your business value expectations.
Okay. And on that note, that does conclude today's podcast. Thanks again to Helen Huntley for speaking with us today. And thank you all for listening. Have a great day.